So I think a quick introduction of myself is needed here. I used to be, back 15 years ago when I started my career, I used to be a software developer. I was doing Perl, PHP, Java stuff. I already went ahead. I used to be a Java developer, used to be a developer. And then I ended up in environments where I was the guy actually putting stuff in production. I was the guy actually having to build the platforms that were going to be used. So I became an operations person because of necessity. And that evolved into doing larger stuff and doing more complex stuff. So these days I'm doing basically nothing but infrastructure work. My role today is being CTO of a large, in Europe at large, open source consultancy company. I blog, I try to convince people that DevOps is the good way, but what I mostly try to do is try to be good at my job. So there's a bunch of alternative titles for this talk, and I've been giving this talk or similar talks to Java developers or PHP developers and telling them how to deal with grumpy old system administrators or how to do agile administration or explaining system administrators that dev administration might be their new job title. I think to get this going, we first need to define what a DevOps is. So let me start. A DevOps is a 30-something senior infrastructure guy who used to have a development background, has a lot of open source experience. He's, well, given that the movement started in Belgium and lots of people from the UK were involved, he's mostly European, he likes beer and he likes sushi. And that's probably the best definition I can ever give. So, who qualifies for that? Okay, a couple of people. So that was a joke, right? What's this thing really about? So a couple of years ago, I was doing lots of conference work, talking at different conferences and how I was doing automated deployment, how we were doing configuration management. And I kept running into the same people. I was running into people like Gildas, Eric Clay Schaefer. Well, I wasn't running into him, but Patrick was running into him. I was running into Jess, running into John Willis, and we were all talking about the same topics. We were talking about continuous delivery, continuous integration, configuration management, building, packaging software, monitoring, measuring, all that stuff. And we figured out that in Europe there basically was no good conference to deal with this stuff. So at CloudCamp Antwerp 2009, Patrick and I decided, well, maybe it's time we do something about it. So Patrick found a location, and I supported him, and basically that was DevOps Days Ghent, and it was awesome. Lots of people came back from that conference with the idea that that was the best conference they had been to ever. And it wasn't a conference like people lecturing, it was really three tracks in the morning, three talks, and in the afternoons we only had open spaces. People talking to each other, how they dealt with their problems, how they were actually solving the problems they had. So, after Ghent, there was another one in Mountain View. We had DevOps Days in Hamburg. We had a lot of people want to start organizing the same kind of conference, the same kind of event, where they could learn from their peers and where they could actually get stuff that interested them, and not from somebody who had just a little experience, but really from people that were actually doing this stuff. So what is DevOps? Well, it's a growing movement. It's something that's not there yet. It's people talking, it's people discussing on how to deal with these problems. We definitely don't have all the answers yet, but what we're trying to do is create awareness to lots of different communities. Patrick and I have been talking to Java developers at Java conferences, we've been talking to Ruby developers, PHP developers. We're trying to reach out to different communities. So it's kind of weird that after almost doing this kind of work for 3 years, we stand again in front of Unix administrators that actually started this. So it feels a bit weird for me to be here. So we've been trying to point out the problems we see, and we try to solve them. We don't have all the answers yet, but actually this thing is not new. The only thing that's new is that today we have a common name on how to call this phenomenon, and that's DevOps. So what's the real problem? The real problem is that traditional organizations are not agile enough. They cannot deploy the same way that small organizations can do their stuff. So, for those who were in the buff yesterday, I already spoiled the next slide, but if this is the problem, then this is the solution. Okay, so you guys must be midway the slide. I'm not gonna let you read it all. You can Google this. It's straight from Wikipedia. It's what Edwards said in 1986. It's absolutely not new. It's how to be good at your job. It's how to build an organization that does things the right way. So that sums up to what this DevOps really, and Damon Edmonds, and this is a slide you saw this morning, only Damon wasn't credited there. This is about culture, this is about automation, this is about measurement and sharing. So let's take a step back and figure out how we got there. So who remembers the days when, or is even still in those days, when on Friday evening, 5 o'clock, you get a mail from a developer with a tarball attached, look, deploy this. Who's still in that situation? Nobody. Oh, one guy dares to admit, two, okay. So why are we having this discussion? Has everybody already solved the problem? I used to get these a lot. I actually still get them from third parties we deal with, from other people. And always the same question. What are the dependencies? Where do I have to deploy this? On what machine do you have to deploy this? Does it need a database? What about user management? What about high availability? What about scalability? Or, well, actually, it's 5 o'clock and I can't even install this thing. It's not working. But of course, the developer who wrote this stuff, he went home. And next step you see is we fight. There's a huge mud fight and developers start hating people, developers start hating admin people because they have the feeling that the operations people slow down stuff. We tend to say no because we're afraid that they will break stuff because they didn't test it. And we refuse to break stuff, but that's going to cost us money. So we care about uptime, and we don't really care about the fancy features they have. And does it surprise you that we get looked at that way when we have books like this? Okay, it's been 10 years since I last read that, but it doesn't surprise me. We still have to prove ourselves that we can do things different and we can change the way we've been operating. So, 10 days into operations, if stuff really works, then, yeah, we have these questions like, what load is this? What is memory usage? Are these logs or is this actually customer data? And, well, I'm still running into environments where customers say, well, we don't even know if we've got an active user on this part of the site, so maybe wait 5 minutes before you shut it down. Because they have no measurement, no trending, nothing. And how many times have you seen a Java site which debugging enabled by default? It's still there. And probably the guy who wrote it already left. So 11 days into operations, that's a crash. But we can solve this. System administrators are not here to block things that should go on. We're here to help people. We should start thinking and start working with marketing people, with business people, as soon as they think about a new feature. We should start talking as soon as possible and get involved in a project. And it's not just the features they want, it's also the non-functional features we need to discuss. We need to talk about security, we need to talk about backups, we need to talk about all those things as soon as possible in the life cycle of a project. Who's doing that already? Why isn't the rest doing that? Why aren't you talking to your colleagues? Don't you guys like beer and sushi? I can imagine you don't like sushi, but beer, who doesn't like beer? Come on. Drink Cokes, whatever, wine, scotch, whatever. talk with your colleagues, talk with your peers, and figure out what their problems are, what they are going to do next. That's the only way to solve part of these problems. So it's about breaking down the silos. It's about all the kids playing with their own toys. No, let them play together with the toys. Because we're all just a bunch of kids when it comes to playing with our toys. Nobody's going to touch my toy. I still see my two young kids playing, and when the youngest takes a toy from the other one, it's, ah. System administrators and developers used to be exactly the same. So what are we trying to do? What's the actual nirvana? And it actually fits perfectly to the previous talk. Nirvana is continuous delivery. It's being able to touch one part of your system, have a developer commit a piece of source code, have it go through a test cycle, and then just have it been deployed. So how many times a day do you want to do that? So Flickr does it 10 times a day. Why? Because it used to be pain, and nobody dared to deploy it. Nobody dared to actually make the change. And because they got better at it, because they practiced their changes, they knew that they could actually do it. Lots of people are afraid of doing it, but to me, and it's really weird having the exit guys right in front of me. So not only to me, but to a lot of people, it's not the fact that you actually are doing it, but the fact that you are capable of doing it at every point in your development cycle, that you each moment in time you can take a snapshot of what is the latest stable build and deploy it. And you don't have to do this every time. So how do we get there? Well, the first thing is start using version control. There's really no more excuses not to version anything on your system. You really should be versioning all scripts, all tools, all config, all cookbooks and Puppet manifests you're using. So who is not using config version control yet? So either you guys are really way too shy to admit that you're not doing it, or I'm really preaching to the choir. So version control, that's it. Next step, continuous integration. If your developers are writing code, they're supposed to add unit tests. They're supposed to add all kinds of tests that make sure that their application is still doing what it should do. And they're using tools for that, like Jenkins with a zillion plugins. And they actually make sure that the builds you're building are really reproducible. But you also need to do that as a system guy. You also need to do tests on your Puppet manifest, on your chef recipes, or on your CF engine code. Who's testing your Puppet manifest today? Or chef recipes? Okay, already a good start. A bunch of people are doing this. So you have to introduce the concept of build pipelines. You have to be able to have different phases in your build environment, and you have to be able to abort when a build or a test failed as soon as possible. You don't have to go through the whole chain and then see in the end, there was actually something in the beginning that already failed. Why are we still doing this? You really should be able to abort your tests and your build as soon as possible so you can get quick feedback and you can get relevant feedback and fix it. If the build breaks, code or configuration, abort. Everybody has to stop and work on fixing the build. And it's a build, to me, it's both the application that you are deploying and the infrastructure underneath. You should be able to build a full box, a Linux image, a Solaris image, with the application on. Not isolated components, because you'll have to integrate them afterwards. Everything has to work together. You also need to have integration tests. And you probably also want to have parallel build lines to do that. There's one big problem today. Most people have software building done correctly. Lots of people already have infrastructure building done correctly, but how do you manage the data? That's still one of the topics that I'm looking for answers. How do you take your production data and sometimes sanitize it and sometimes not sanitize it and make that you can actually use the same data in test and production? And sometimes it's about really high volumes. How do you deal with that kind of stuff? That's still a problem that needs to be solved. So, if you summarize that, there's different ways that are exactly the same. Developers are using version control. Operations people are doing it. We're doing automated builds. I hope every time everybody's doing bug tracking or issue tracking. And lots of operations people now are starting to do continuous integration and are starting to do integrated testing. But there's still one big difference. It's the way how we deal with approaching projects. If you look at developers in an agile environment, lots of them are doing Scrum. They define sprints. They define sprints in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and they define upfront a bunch of features they're going to implement during that period. Now, in an operational way, there's usually no way that we can guarantee that we can only spend time on working on those features, because there's always stuff happening. And then lots of people start thinking about, rather than telling how much time we're going to work on something and how much time we're going to spend up front, we're going to limit the amount of things we can do together, and we're going to limit the amount of concurrent tasks we're working on. So that's where people start doing Kanban. So anybody using Kanban for operations here? Okay, I think maybe next year you should ask somebody to do a talk on Kanban for operations. So where does that end up? Are we doing dev administration now? Are we? I know it's a really ugly word, but everybody seems to like it. Weird. So what are we doing? Are we doing development now? Are we doing the same for development for ops developers? We're writing code, right? Who's not writing code today? It's just ugly languages. Right, so all the rules we have for developers today should apply for operations people too. And we'll actually need to help those people make the same platforms. If we're giving operations people Solaris machines and we're actually deploying on BSD, that's not going to be fine. We're going to need to think about how we're going to give a developer a development environment that looks exactly like the test environment we're going to test his software in, and the same platform we're going to use to deploy his code on. So how do we do this? We give them small virtual machines. We give them tools like Vagrant, which actually allows us to reproduce the full environment they have and have it on their laptop. Who's using Vagrant? Cool. So there's a buff tomorrow night at, I think, 9:30, where I'm going to try to introduce Vagrant to some people that are interested, if you want to join that. So we've been doing version control. We're doing testing. We're doing everything with different stages, with different platform. It's about deployment now. How do you deploy software? Who's still manually installing software? Why?
Did you not just hear my talk?
Did you miss the keynote too?
In large part because the deployment is deployed if you don't have a reliable connection back to the home office. So having to do the push, by the time you've done the push, you push out of the demilitarized zone for our customers, then going and pushing it from there, the target machine may as well go ahead and install it by hand.
So the reason why you're not doing that is because there's too much latency, because your link might be down. It's funny because I've been doing remote deployments over satellite links for ages. So it's mostly about how to ship.
Yeah.
I think there's two slides further from this. A topic on that. Funny. So the thing about automated deployment is that you have to be able to scratch any machine in your infrastructure and re-scratch it and be up and running at the same point in time with any effort. There's plenty of tools for that today. Kickstart, pre-seeding, System Imager, Five. Who's using those tools? Everybody, I hope. Yeah. But how do you deploy an application? How do you think about code versus config? There's a lot of discussion. I think every DevOps day so far has had this discussion going on. And each time we end up with the same conclusions. It might be that there's always the same people in the room, but the conclusions are basically, when we think about this, that everybody likes to have his software packaged. If it's binaries that have to be compiled, if it's chart files, if it's Java stuff, we always like to have stuff packaged. Except when it's PHP or Perl or Python code, which is really changing flexible. Then people are starting to look at, well, if it's in a Ruby style, it's usually Capistrano, or looking at tools like Fabric or Control Tire to actually deploy code. But indeed, one of the big questions is, some people want to deploy from version control. They just want to deploy, do a Git checkout, and have all their code deployed. And sometimes you don't have access to your version control due to firewalling, due to off-site restrictions, due to being on a remote site over a satellite link, which you really don't want to have connection to. So that's why a lot of people want to have their stuff packaged. And packaging basically gives you also the features that you have consistency checks, you have dependency checks, and you have security checks inside the framework. Every decent operating system today has these features. So when I'm looking at a platform that I manage, I want to have two ways to identify where a file is coming from. It's either from a configuration management tool or from a package management system. Everything else is user-generated data or log files. And that should be not reproducible. So also an important thing is, where do you put config? A lot of developers, lots of Java developers specifically, they want to put their config inside the WAR file, inside the ear. Anybody having those problems? It's easy to tell them that you don't like that. Just show them how to, you have to modify those files and how much effort it is for you to do that. And once they have to do that themselves manually, they'll gladly help you and gladly give out the templates of those files so you can actually have your configuration management tool package those files. Also, when you are doing packaging, people tend to say, but packaging is hard, packaging is difficult, and packaging is something that's going to take me a lot of time. Well, there's two things to that. First of all, if you're trying to get together with your developer, when you're trying to build and create a package, that's a perfect opportunity to actually sit together and see what's all inside the application, what configuration files it needs. It's a perfect moment to start thinking on what is in this software, what do I need to package? And the second thing is that, well, today there really is no excuse anymore to say packaging is difficult because we've got FPM. Who's using FPM? Two people. So Jordan Cicel, he basically is writing software when he's angry. He's doing anger-driven software development. And when he doesn't like something like logging or how packaging works, he just writes a tool that's called fucking package manager, and it's awesome. You can take anything from the internet, gem files, Python files, whatever, and he'll download it and create a package from it. Really have to look into this. So when we get software from third parties, what are we looking at? We're looking at software that we can either configure in a config file or from an external API. But lots of vendors today are still giving us a web GUI or another GUI, which really is unusable in a large scale. And I think it's a role for everybody in the system administrator's job to talk to those proprietary vendors and say, look, guys, this is just not working. This is something that really has to change because we cannot deploy your crap anymore. Or if you've got power enough, just stop doing that and stop buying those tools. Because if you're starting to do configuration management and you have to configure 1,000 nodes, modify 2,000 files, then really, you don't want to do that using a GUI. You really don't want to go to all those 1,000 machines and point and click. I was dealing with a customer about 2 years ago where they had a box an appliance built, and they had no API on their appliance, and they had Webmin installed. And they thought they had a really good solution. Up till the day when a customer called and said, look, we want to buy 600 of those. Can you please pre-configure them? And they had no way of doing that. So that lured them to expose an external API and to actually do stuff with configuration management rather than having the end user use just a web GUI. So there's plenty of tools out there. I've seen lots of companies making the mistake of actually building their own tools. And then the guy who wrote them left. And then they got stuck. So don't troll your own. Use something that you can get from the open source community, get something with books available, get something where you can send people on training. So deployment definitely is not the end. There's other stuff you need to do. How do you manage 1,000 nodes? How do you tell 500 of those 1,000 nodes that they'll need to upgrade and the other 500 not? So orchestration is one of the things that is going to be more important. You're going to need to be able to trigger upgrades, service runs, service changes, or even shut down machines on a lot of different, based on a lot of different criteria. You're going to be able, or you're going to want to take down a service, you want to take down an Apache service on all the machines with an odd IP address, or an even IP address. And if you want to do that, you need tools like mCollective, Noah, Rundeck, and they will help you. They will give you the power to actually make selections based on the configuration that's on those platforms. So, high availability. I've got a feeling that everybody's already doing this stuff, so you need really to tell your developers that stateless applications are the stuff you really want. You really need to tell them that if they're writing stuff on a file system, it's going to be really difficult for you to just have that magically fail over, or you're going to have to use a clustered file system. So there's going to be a lot of stuff in the next couple of years where clustered file systems are going to need to improve. Scalability is also something you'll need to discuss with your developers. I realize that in the US it's a lot more common to start talking scalability up front, but in Europe, when people start thinking about scalability, they're just like, yeah, well, for the 500 users we're going to have, because that's a different scale, that's a different problem you're dealing with. You're dealing with languages, you're dealing not with the same amount of users. But the most important part, obviously, is that you need to monitor what's going on. You need to be able to trend and see what's going on. So who thinks monitoring sucks? What are you guys using for monitoring? Who's using Nagios? Who's using Xenos? Who's using Zabbix? Rudy, you don't count. Does it scale for you?
Small environment.
Okay. And who's really happy with his monitoring solution? Okay. So those are not just users. About 4 years ago, I was doing a study, and we basically took all the big monitoring tools, and we settled down to, well, it's still Nagios or Ikinga, which basically still is Nagios. Because why? Because those files, those setups had files which we could write from Puppet or Chef, and all the others had broken APIs. Of course, we're 2-3 years later now, the APIs have improved, but it's still not there. Lindsay Holmwood came up with Flapjack, because he was also having problems with Nagios at scale. There's a bunch of new stuff on the blog for monitoring and trending. So there's graphite, there's stuff that's coming back from the HPC area, so Ganglia is there. But what about logging? Who has a good alternative for Splunk? Okay, and which one is that?
Well, for a paper about it last year, VTech, but it's not open source.
Okay. Have a look at what Logstash is doing. Again, Jordan. Have a look at what Greylock 2 is doing. Those tools are getting in the right direction, but it's still not there. There's still a lot of room that's needed to improve these things. So we've done a lot of automation, and we are now capable of doing continuous delivery and basically taking a piece of code, modifying it, going through the full cycle and deploying it. But we didn't solve anything, because you can still break stuff the whole way. It's still about how people deal with this thing, how people deal with failure and how they deal with change. It's still about the people. When Ben this morning asked what's the most important thing, I was almost ready to stand up and say it's about the people. He said it's about beer. It's partly right, because getting people together with beer, that solves a lot of problems, but it's still about the people that drink the beer. So if you want to take everything, if you want to go from source to production, you really have to do a lot of testing, you really have to do behavioral and functional tests, you really have to do stress tests, load tests, all that stuff. You need to have feedback loops in there, you need to have monitoring, measurement, and then you can go to continuous deployment, and then you can survive the test. I've been saying this stuff for 7 years. I'm really happy that today I'm not alone anymore, and that actually Lisa decided to do a full track on DevOps. It's time for everybody to stand up and join the movement and start discussing this stuff. And there's the Agile System Administrators on Google Groups. There's DevOpsDays.org, which has been sold out for every instance since the last 2 years. So it's pretty difficult to get in unless if you're really early. But if we go back to the first slide, definition of a DevOp, it's not a job definition. There's not even a definition. There's no strict rules. There's no strict tools. There's a bunch of tools out there you can start using and learn from, but it's the idea that you want to change. It's a culture and professional movement, and it's not even you. So if you're not already doing it, and from the reactions in the audience, I think you're already doing it, you're doing it wrong. And the title of this talk was "The Future is There, It's Not Evenly Distributed Yet," but now it is. Okay, so thank you. Any questions? I'll put up the slides later tonight, so you don't need to take pictures of everyone.
Hi, Chris Allison, Northeastern University. One of the takeaways that I have from your talk, in addition to some interesting things that I've already started looking up, is that there seems to be this movement out there called DevOps, which seems to come out of shops that run services that you access via a web browser. And the period goes at the end of that statement. And some of the statements that you're making, I think, are really great and really applicable to our field in general, but I feel like certain aspects of the DevOps movement are very narrowly focused and aren't as applicable to, say, a university where I work, not even in central IT, but in a college where we're supporting all kinds of things all over the place, and it's not, we have a team of developers and a single product, but we've got, you know, all sorts of things coming out of our ears, some of which can be managed well, some of which just don't lend themselves to the kinds of boxes that DevOps wants to have things be put in. And I'm wondering what your reaction to that is.
So when I'm on this side of the ocean, people think it's actually a movement that started out of web operations people, and mostly web operations people. I've been doing this kind of work for the past 7-8 years in equipment manufacturing organizations. So basically, I've been doing this in companies that were building products they were shipping out to customers. And they had the same problems on how to deliver a stable project, how to deliver a stable product. And it's the same methodologies, it's the same ideas. It's just not a website they're managing. So I think that when you want to do this kind of things in environments that are not web-related, there's tools that are going to be different, there's ideas that are going to be different, but it all comes down to having operational excellence and doing your job in a good way. And that's basically what Deming was saying already 15, 20 years ago. It's not about having a site that's live, it's about satisfying your end users and satisfying the people you're working with. It's about people.
I wouldn't disagree with any of what you just said. I don't know how much that breaks down to some of the specifics you said, but I think it's a great philosophy for us all to have. So thank you.
Hi, Paul Krizak from AMD. I just wanted to kind of add to that discussion that I'm in that same position. We obviously aren't a web shop. We make chips. And in fact, the EDA environment, the chip design environment, has generally been pretty good. I mean, the operations team basically came out of the customers. So we've kind of been DevOps all along. You know, the engineers that make chips, they're Linux guys, so they've built these tools, and they used to roll them out themselves, but then they split off this IT group that kind of does it now for them. But what I've started to find is that, you know, once we got these this IT that was separate, we started getting dragged away from this DevOps type of, you know, model. Of course, we didn't call it DevOps then. It just meant we were getting more corporate, is kind of what we called it. But I think what in some of these situations, it's not so much that you have an app that you're managing that you're pushing out. It's more that even within IT, you know, when we do CF Engine releases, I mean, we use those same principles of having, you know, a development pipeline and having, you know, test infrastructure and have, you know, monitoring the updates as they go out, so that, you know, we make sure that our customers have a stable platform to work on. And you know, it's I think it'll be good to take that back and have names to put on it and be able to you know, to point to a whole movement to say, look, we're not alone in this. There's other people doing this too.
So there's another good example, which is pretty much in the same area as you guys. It's Ernest Müller from National Instruments. He's pretty vocal about what he's been doing in building their products. Mm-hmm. So that's videos you can probably find on Google. I think there is even a podcast from DevOps Cafe from about a year and a half ago, where he's explaining how also he does with a not web environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Yep. No more questions? I know we've been going over this topic all day, so you guys are tired, and lots of the questions already have been answered, so it's probably time for drinks and cocktails.